January 14th, 2020, regular town board meeting at 7 o'clock.
Okay, we're going to get started. I'd like to welcome everyone to a regular town board meeting, Monroe Town Board, for January 14th, 2020. And we'll ask the clerk for a roll call.
Councilman Hogan?
Here.
Councilman Donahue?
Here.
Councilwoman LeClaire?
Here.
Councilman Noonan?
Here.
Supervisor Kuzniers?
Here. And ask everyone to please rise for the pledge of allegiance.
The pledge of allegiance is to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, everyone. First item on the agenda is the approval of minutes. And we'll break them up. We'll take December 19th, all the minutes from December 19th, 2019, as well as December 30th as the board.
I would abstain from the 19th.
You want to take it separate? Or
The December 19th separate from the other two. However it is, it's easier. I just, on those days, I wasn't here.
Motion to approve the minutes on December 19th, 2019. There were two public hearings, an audit meeting, and a regular board meeting.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? And abstaining is Council Member Hogan on those. I'm sorry, and as well as Council Member Donahue for opposition. And the next set of minutes for December, actually the last meeting of the year, for December 30th, which was a special town board meeting.
Motion to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Yes.
Opposed?
Did Councilman Donahue abstain from that as well?
I believe he wants.
No, December 30th.
December 30th, I'll abstain on that.
We have all in favor, so they are approved, and we have Councilmember Donahue abstaining from the vote for December 30th. And then the first set of minutes for January 2020 is for January 2nd, which was the organizational meeting. If somebody would like to move those.
Motion to approve.
Second. All in favor?
Yes.
Motion carries, all in favor. So those minutes are approved. Item 2 on this evening's agenda is to set future meetings, workshops. I don't have any at this time. I don't know if any board members have any requests.
No.
Item 3 on the agenda is the Mount Medical Contract, which is a firm that the town uses for our pre-employment physicals. They have increased their rate over last year by $10 for the pre-employment physical or JCA exam, and the price is now $120 for that purpose. That's all we really use them for, but as part of the contract, there's a shy bladder wait time of $40 per hour, and there's a specimen, a retesting, a positive specimen fee, which is $250, and review of positive drug screenings of $100, regardless of the final outcome. And there is also a late fee, interest fee of 1.5% monthly, applied to any outstanding invoices over 30 days. My recommendation is to stay with this firm but we will need a resolution to indicate that.
Is it a resolution for giving you authority to sign the
contract agreement with Mountain Medical?
I'd like to make a motion to give authority to the supervisor to sign the contract with Mountain Medical. This shall be in effect from January 1, 2020 through December 31st, 2020.
So moved. Or second.
Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Yes.
Any opposed? Motion carries. None opposed. Item four on this evening's agenda is a Recreation Department request. First one I have is our annual porta-potty rental. We looked into the possibility of actually buying our own porta-johns to see if we could save money, and essentially because of the increased cost that the town would be charged and the cost of the actual structure, it's essentially cost prohibitive. So the prices that we have two vendors. We have Party Poopers out of Argyle of a price of $175 per month plus $50 a month for freezing temps, which is November through April. And the second vendor is one that we have used in the past, Stone Industries out of Saratoga Springs, a price of $240 per month. And I know that the Rec Committee looked into this, and the Rec Committee's recommendation is to go with Stone Industries. They are a Saratoga County vendor. The other one's a Washington County vendor. They have been very responsive over the years, especially when we had tournaments down there, and we really needed a quick turnaround on the pump outs. And they've actually come and done it occasionally for free. So I'm going to recommend we go with the recommendation of the Rec Committee and utilize Stone Industries again for 2020.
So moved.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none. Motion carries. Next request is for two 10-yard dumpsters for the park with a weekly pickup between the month of April through November, and one 2-yard dumpster for the beach with a weekly pickup between the first part of May and the end of December. And the first quote that we have received is from Ace Carving, $350 a month for 10-yard dumpsters and $55 a month for the 2-yard dumpster. The second vendor was Waste Management for a price of $480 a month for the 10-yard dumpsters and $148 a month for the 2-yard dumpster. And there were only two vendors that actually utilized the 10-yard dumpsters. So we only have two quotes. Recommendation is to go with Ace Carding, which is was our current vendor for 2019.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Next item for discussion in the Recreation Department is the rental of pavilion fees that are charged to residents versus non-residents. Currently, Moreau residents are not charged for the rental of a pavilion, and non-residents that utilize less than 6 hours of use, it's $35. And if it's more than 6 hours, non-residents are charged $60. There's a recommendation that we impose a $10 fee on residents. And one of the reasons for this is that it guarantees a resident that they will have access to the pavilion. Right now, any resident can use any pavilion as long as not being utilized and it's not reserved. This would guarantee that they would have access to that pavilion as a resident. I know the rec committee has looked into it. Do you have a recommendation on what we should do with that?
Peter did a great job. He's looked at several local communities. Malta is the lowest, and it's $50. The rest of them are on $85, $250 for Half Moon, $85 for the city of Glens Falls, $100 for Milton, $400 for Saratoga Springs, Wolf is $100, and that's for residents, and more for non-residents. Anybody can use the pavilion at any point if somebody else isn't into it. And I thought about this, and I thought, you're really not asking to use a pavilion. You're asking to let no one else use the pavilion in that amount of time. So to be able to use a pavilion, and I believe, Peter, it's 3 hours typically?
Most of the uses are 3 to 5 hours, I think.
So I think for $10, last year we spent, I'm not sure if it was $2,000 or $3,000 on new barbecues. For the pavilions, they need a good amount of work, and we have had discussion of our new rooms, at least on some of them. We've had a good amount of discussion at one point last year about possibly looking into building more pavilions in places. So it would be nice to be able to have a little bit of money from people that choose to reserve it and not have anyone else use it for that time frame. I think $10 is a pretty good bargain if you consider what everybody else is charging. And if we're looking to bring in maybe $1,500 a year on that, so we're not looking at a huge amount of money, but it would still help us sustain the cost for the use of the pavilions and community pavilions somehow.
Yeah, I don't think it's so much about the revenue. It's more about providing an opportunity to be guaranteed a pavilion. So it's basically a nominal fee, and you get guaranteed rights to that for that day. I mean, you can still utilize pavilion as a resident at any time, no charge. It's just that you're getting a guarantee by completing the paperwork and paying the fee.
Is this discussion time?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So my concerns, and I know that, like, you know, brought up to you, but there's a school request to use it in the springtime that I think the school should be exempt from any fees.
So I looked into that after we spoke, and the school district is exempt. They don't pay any fee. Our school.
Yeah.
If a neighboring community school utilizes it, they do have to pay.
Yeah, okay.
So basically they're treated as a resident as we do now.
No, I understand that, but even like the $10 fee for a school, I don't...
But it wouldn't be charged.
Yeah, that was my thought. Okay.
Because we consider it, you know, it's basically $10.
Yep.
Okay, myself personally, I think $10 is dirt cheap myself. I could even see a little $20 would be reasonable, to be honest with you. But the non-resident fee is $60. No, I think our people paying taxes certainly should get a break. People from outside. $85 the city runs false characters. I'd be willing to take that up to $85. I think $60 is too cheap for non-residents, people not paying taxes. And I think $10 is low, but I think, like you said, we're not trying to make money off of this thing. We're just trying to give people an opportunity to reserve the pavilion. But I would say that we should raise it to $10, and I'm suggesting $85.
So what's the board's pleasure?
So the rec committee, I know we see 10 and 60. Did you guys discuss those numbers as what you think we should charge, or are we going to leave it open to discussion and figure it out today?
Well, right now we're charging non-residents $35. For less than 6 hours, and $60 for more than 6 hours. When I look at what other communities charge, and know that there's a cleanup usually, and a sleep down, and that you clean the charcoal pits and stuff, so we need to know that if something like that is happening, that our residents aren't paying for that, that our people are using it. So I don't have a problem. I know Peter suggested 60, but to charge a non-resident, well, probably less than they're paying anywhere else, are pretty well equal. Greenfield gets 50, But other than that, Glens Falls gets 85, Half Moon gets 250, Malta gets 100 to 150, Milton gets 150. So charging a non-resident 35 currently and moving it to 60, I wouldn't have a problem when we get up to 85.
I would agree with that. The only, my thoughts, one of the concerns is I know that some of these are already rented or leased or what, you know, reserved.
There are several pavilion rentals that have already come in through the town clerk's office.
Mm-hmm.
Have they paid for them?
I'm sorry.
Have they paid for them as well?
I don't believe any of the reservations that have come in yet had fees associated. They were for residents or resident organizations. So any new fees, my recommendation to the board would be that we grandfather them in. I apologize if this is not the appropriate time to say this. Just to give some background to the 1060 sort of price range, going from nothing this year, or going from roughly 140 uses of the pavilion last year that didn't pay anything to use it, and then another 44 or so that paid $35. My intent was to not have an enormous jump from one year to the next. I know that revenue is not our main focus, but simply going to the 10 and 60 fees that I'm proposing, if we were to keep the same or similar numbers of pavilion rentals in 2020, we would more than double the amount of revenue that comes into the park and could go towards picnic tables and pavilion cleanup and things like that. I did mention to Supervisor Kuzmierz that my intent was to come back to you at the end of the year or beginning of 2021 with some feedback on how the numbers may have changed. Was there positive feedback or negative feedback regarding the new fees? And then probably I would be asking you to adjust them up again. But certainly I'm happy to impose whatever fees the board feels are appropriate.
Thank you.
I think I'd almost prefer to set a price and go with it for non-town residents. I'm happy in town. But for a non-resident, I think it's easier to just, if we're thinking in a year we're going to possibly readjust it up, but I think readjust it up where we will be, except for Greenfield, if someone wants to drive to Greenfield, if we raise it.
Well, Greenfield doesn't have a facility.
No, they don't.
That's the thing, they aren't away. You put an $85. It's a bargain. We have a facility like no other facility in there. You know, as far as things to do down there in the park is always beautiful. And I think, you know, once again, we have to think of taxpayers. We're looking, you said we put in new work, and we want to put some new tables, and we want to do that. I just assume let the outsiders do it for it. So that's my opinion.
Yeah,
keep it off the backs of the town residents, you know, this stuff. So I really agree with that.
Because that's what Glens Falls gets, so if a non-resident then has a choice whether they want to go to Glens Falls or Monroe, it would be the same cost. Everywhere else, you're looking at well over $100. Why price it this year and then say we raise it again?
I'm fine with that. I think the only one thought I had as we were thinking about this the last few days and some of the discussions we've had is that maybe when the only review or pavilion that we review pricing on will be like when we finish that playground, when it's fully functional, we're gonna bring more business there. That those picnic tables are gonna be used more. We might want to figure out how, with that pavilion being close to the playground, how that might be maybe priced a little bit differently. We can't, if there is an opportunity for a small amount of revenue, we certainly shouldn't shy away from it.
Well, I do know that there's some municipalities that have allocated specific pavilions where they're always, for residents, are always free or very little charge, and then there's others that have premium prices. So, you can look at that.
I mean, I to to be clear, I think our resident fee of $10 is fine. I don't see the need to increase that fee. I'm thinking about the non-resident fee. Because we're going to have something unique here soon with a completed playground with the splash park, with the spray field, whatever we're calling it, that's going to draw people. And we certainly should take advantage of the opportunities that come forward with that.
Is it important?
So I can certainly make a motion to increase the resident rate to $10 and the non-resident rate to $85.
Okay. And I think we should have language in there specifying that Southland Central School District shall have access at no charge. Just that, so it's memorialized.
Should we amend it now?
Is it somebody's second?
Yes,
Okay, so I'm going to withdraw that motion. Motion withdrawn.
Just one question before we go further with it. Leanne, do we charge to reserve the beach pavilion?
They don't reserve the beach pavilion at all. They stopped that several years ago. They use that solely for the people that are using the beach.
That's good, because it's so, I was concerned that we were going to allow rentals there, because there's no shade, and the people that are there using the beach
right.
should be able to get a beach.
Right.
Great, thank you. So that's all set.
Sorry. No problem. Sure, we make that motion here. I'd like to make a motion to increase the resident pavilion rental fee to $10 as of January 1st, 2020, and the non-resident pavilion rental fee to $85 with a clause that Southland Falls Central School District and any needs from them would be exempt from those from that $10 fee.
Second.
Can I ask one question?
Yeah, sure.
I apologize. So if you're making this effective January 1st, anybody who...
So
I thought that was paid for any of the fees.
Right. But Peter's suggestion was your grandfather, those who pay for
it. Right. There are several organizations that have requested use of pavilions. One is a local church that uses it for a week in August. So they would be looking at, you know, a $50 fee, $10 per day. My recommendation would be to make it effective immediately, leaving the ones that are currently there.
Actually, I prefer that we take them when the time comes that we have a policy in place now, and then by board resolution, we exempt them from it. That's very
good.
I think it's community.
Okay, so this is effective January 1st, is what? Councilman Noonan.
That was in the motion I added.
Okay.
Any discussion?
And the people that have reserved, are going to let them be okay for this year? Or are they looking to get
that? I don't think the motion says that.
I know, but I just thought maybe that we're just starting this.
Well, they haven't paid the fee.
But they've reserved and all the paperwork is done.
All the paperwork is done, they don't get it.
They're non-residents that didn't have a fee, so they've all been approved. Everything was approved. They were non-residents.
Okay. Just easier.
Okay.
So the motion is under discussion. Any other discussion? If not, all in favor?
Aye.
Yes.
Opposed? Motion carried unanimously.
There was one other caveat to the pavilion rentals. I was hoping that the board would sort of officially recognize myself as rec leader, the rec department, as the ones to make the pavilion reservations or take the pavilion reservations going forward. Classically, it's been something that the clerk's office has handled. Of course, they will still process any payments to the town. But seeing that I currently handle all of the field use requests and event paperwork and things.
We don't have a policy on that, do we?
Nope.
So just an administrative one, that's fine.
Okay.
Leanne will always give up work, and the board will let her do that.
I think just to hear the board say that they were okay with me shifting that to my department, and then I'll continue to work with the clerk's office for the payments. Anything else for Rebecca? Thank you.
Item 5 on this evening's agenda is the transfer station. I can report that we did pump out our holding tanks. We had two holding tanks. The total amount collected from both tanks was approximately 2,000 gallons. I was down there today talking with staff and looking inside the containment areas, and we do need to move forward. Actually, it was brought to my attention last week that the alarm system that indicates when the tanks are full is not operating. I have no idea how long it has not been operating, but we had asked Ted Mansour, who oversees transfer station, to look into getting it repaired. He did provide this late to me, and I think the board members have a copy of two companies that do that kind of work. The first one is Steward Equipment, I believe they're out of Albany, Rochester. And the other is Emmerich, not sure where they're out of. Emmerich would not. They had a lot of questions and could not give us an accurate cost, but they said everything's predicated on a per-hour basis with mileage. And the first company, I mentioned, Seward Equipment, did provide us with their service rates for 2020. And my recommendation is that we reach out to them, because I think we need to get this up and running as soon as possible. And I would also recommend that the town board approve the company looking at the equipment to diagnose what we have to do to move forward. But I cannot, and they cannot, give us a firm number. They can only give us an hourly rate. So their hourly standard rates, I'm not going to read overtime, because they will not be here on overtime on holidays and Sundays. Are for a service technician $125 per hour, for public works projects, which this would qualify, the prevailing wage, it's $155 an hour, and a reliability engineer is $180 per hour. Those standard rates are in force and effect between the hours of 7 a.m. and 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. There's also a technician travel charge and hourly rate, based on the numbers above, with a vehicle charge of $1.25 per mile, portal to portal. There's a 90-day limited warranty for defects in parts and workmanship. And there's a 3% processing surcharge, which applies to all credit card orders. They also charge for oil waste disposal, $30 per pump per machine. Oil analysis of $75 per pump per machine. Laser alignment of $205 per pump, vibration testing of $205 per day, confined space equipment is $205 per station, if they need a flatbed truck and crane, it's $225 per trip, portable gantry crane is $205 per trip, rotojet service is $205 per pump, and an emergency loaner pump is $25 per day, and shop storage is $10 per day after 30 days. My recommendation would be to authorize the service rates, which I just read from, that have been approved by the company for 2020, and at least we get diagnosed. Once we have information on what we need to do to fix it, we can then move forward with an actual cost for repair that we can deliver it in. So if the board's okay with that, I'd entertain a motion to engage them at those rates.
Motion to approve.
Second.
With Seaworth Company?
Where is it?
Seaworth?
Yeah. S-I-E-W-E-R-T.
Correct. Okay.
Do you have a motion?
Oh, wait a second. Motion.
Any discussion?
No, this Seaworth Company is who I had contact with through E1. That's who
E1. Oh, gotcha. All right.
And yes, I would definitely go with this group.
I've got a question. How do these tanks get to the point where dollars knowing that it's accepted the alarm system or something like that? Do we have any sealed contracts or anybody to service that machinery down there directly? Pick up on something like that before we did the ones that we're at?
I believe we have a service contract for the common. Not necessarily the alarm system. I have to double check.
Okay, yeah, but so it seemed to me like if we have a service contract, right, somebody keeping an eye on it, that the alarm system would be picked up, that wasn't working, that wasn't, so we don't get ourselves into the predicament that we're in now, coming in
well,
trying to figure it all out.
I won't dispute that past practices did not involve a lot of oversight.
We're going to do something, correct?
That's yeah.
Okay. That's my question.
That's what our goal is.
You're in charge of it, JD.
I know, I'm going to.
Okay.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Yes.
Yes.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Item 6 on the agenda is the town legal services. We have been provided a draft contract with the current firm Bartlett Stewart and Rose PC, which is our current counsel for the town. The terms of the contract are identical to last year. My recommendation would be to move forward and authorize the supervisor to sign the contract. I don't know what the board is doing on that.
I make a motion that to authorize the supervisor to sign the contract with Bartlett Papa Stewart and Rose.
Second.
Any discussion? Good?
Yeah. Sure. No, I as per the as per the wording of the contract.
Yes. Right.
Go ahead and sign it.
Yes.
Yep.
Which is the same as last year.
Correct. So that was a motion and a second?
Yep. Mm-hmm. So all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Yes.
The motion carries unanimously. And just for the record, for the benefit of the public, we have included in the contract the following rates. Under the section of fees, the hourly rate for services will be $170 per hour for principal's time, $100 per hour for an associate's time, and $80 per hour for paralegal time. And it's agreed that the firm shall provide representation as needed at the Planning and Zoning Board, Zoning Board of Appeals, but per town town ordinance, it's only at the request of the chair of each respective board. And the usual contents for disbursements for postage, travel expenses, Lexus service, travels at 57 cents per mile for court appearances. So, there you have it. Item 7 on the agenda is a contract for dog control services. At our organizational meeting, we have established Alicia Flowed as the town dog control officer. Her contract expired at the end of 2019. draft contract before the board members. I believe council has reviewed it. It's identical to last year, except that there is an increase of $150 per month in compensation. So if the board would like, I would need a motion to authorize the supervisor to sign that contract.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Any discussion?
I just know that, well, real quick, I just know that everybody who's dealt with Ms. Flau has had nothing but good things to say in terms of professionalism, how she handled the call. And I think it does make people safe to know that we have a great animal control officer working for the town. So I think it's worth every penny.
Anyone else? All in favor?
Aye.
Yes.
Any opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Number eight, I've got some requests from the Highway Department. First one is to purchase diesel fuel for 2020 budget year from Sprague Operating Resources. The Highway Superintendent would like to open a PO in the amount of $25,000. This would come from account DB5142.460, which has a current balance of $65,000. That's under state contract.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Next request, also from Highway Superintendent, is for gasoline for the 2020 budget year from Global Monticello Group Corporation. I'd like to open a PO in an amount of $15,000. This would also come from account DB5142.460, which has a current balance of $65,000. This is also on state contract.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Yes.
Opposed? Motion passes unanimously. And the final request is for purchase of rock salt for 2020 budget year. The Highway Superintendent is requesting a PO in the amount of $80,000 from for vendor Morton Salt. This is also under state contract. It would come from account DB5142.490, which has a current balance of $170,000.
Second.
Is this one that we pushed over from last year? Okay, no problem.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. The actually just a FYI, board members have received a memo from the Highway Superintendent indicating that three vehicles will be listed from the Highway Department. Actually, three from the Highway or two from Highway? Three from Highway, and one will be the old Building Department pickup truck under miscellaneous items at Auctions International. When's that going to be on?
They do them every day. It's just when I
open them and put them in. So we want the board and the public to be aware of that. Also on their Highway, as the board in 2019 is aware, and I believe our new colleague is also aware because he's around for some of those conversations, we're going to be working to repair the new Highway garage roof. And this time it's the board's intent to have a construction manager that provides oversight of the job when it's repaired this time. We have a proposal from an approved town engineer, which is the LaBerge Group, for that purpose. We budgeted for it for 2020, and the proposal that we have before us is for $42,000 to accomplish that work. Included in the construction contract as part of the construction phase, they will act as town representative regarding the duties and responsibilities and limitations of authority as described in the general conditions of the construction contract. They'll advise and construct and consult the town during the construction phase. The engineer shall issue the owner's authorized instructions to the contractor. They'll make visits to the site for construction observation and progress. They'll ensure that the work is being done according to the drawings as specified. They'll review contractor's requests for progress payments. Payments won't be made without verification that the work was completed as required by the drawings. They'll make recommendations to town on all claims relating to the execution progress of the construction work. They'll also notify the town of permanent work which does not conform to the result required in the construction contract. Under construction observation, the LaBerge Group will provide a part-time resident project representative that will provide services to the town regarding schedules. They'll review the progress schedule, schedule shop drawing submissions, and schedule values prepared by the contractor and consult with the engineer concerning their acceptability. They will attend conferences for pre-construction, arrange a schedule of progress meetings and other job conferences as required in consultation with the engineers, and notify those expected to attend in advance. They shall be the liaison and serve as engineer liaison with the contractor, working principally through the contractor's superintendent. They will alert the contractor directly through their superintendent to the hazards involved in accepting or acting upon instructions from the owner or others, except instructions transmitted to the engineer or themselves. Regarding shop drawings and samples, they'll receive report they have received the shop drawings and samples which have been reviewed by the engineer. They'll review work, rejection of effective work, observation of impacts which include conduct periodic on-site observations of work in progress to assist the engineer in determining that the project is proceeding in accordance with the contract. They shall report to the engineer whenever he believes that any work is unsatisfactory, faulty, or defective. They review tests, equipment, system startups, and operating and maintenance instructions are conducted as required by contract documents. They will accompany visiting officials representing the public or other agencies having jurisdiction over the project. And they will also be responsible under record maintenance for, among other things, maintaining orderly files, correspondence reports, job conferences, shop drawings, and sample submissions, etc. And at the end, for completion, before an engineer issues a statement of substantial completion, they shall will submit to the contractor a list of observed items requiring correction. They'll conduct final review of the company of engineer, owner, contractor, and prepare a final list of items to be corrected and or completed. They will review that all items on the final list have been corrected and make recommendations to engineer concerning acceptance and prepare record drawings. And the breakdown of their total estimated fee is for construction and administration, the $18,000. Construction observation would be $20,500. And they are estimating reimbursable expenses of approximately $3,500. So that puts their quote in here at $42,000. And based on Tom's experiences, I highly recommend that you hire him.
Absolutely. I make a motion that we approve the supervisor signing, and I make a motion that we can contract with the LaBerge Group.
I'll second that motion.
Any discussion?
Yes. Is this just for the roof, or is this also the HVAC units that the HVAC repairs being done?
This is for...
Strictly the roof?
No, it's all... The HVAC is part of the global repair to the highway garage.
Okay.
That's for the highway garage. All the repairs that are going to go on. HVAC and the roof repair itself.
This covers that?
Yes.
Great. I'm all for it.
Yeah, I think you know. I think we've learned from past mistakes that these are things we have to do. You know, it costs money, but sometimes you gotta spend money to save money, and spend money to have that extra insurance. And that's what I think just gives that extra, you know, the eyes are not, the D's are crossed, and so I'm sure it will fit.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Yes.
Any opposed? Motion carries unanimous. Item 9 on this evening's agenda is water district consolidation. We have been moving forward with that process. I've outlined to the board that part of that process, we authorized a Verge group to move forward with the Craig application. We were successful in receiving it. Now I will need a authorization to sign the contract with the Verge group to actually do the work now for the consolidation. And what I have is a proposal of amount to actually it's an amendment, a contract addendum to the current professional services related to the MAPPAN report for water district consolidation, and it is in the amount of $24,950, which is something we budgeted for 2020. So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Yes.
Any opposed? Motion carries unanimous. Item 10 is a zoning board appointment. We do have a vacancy, unfilled vacancy on the Zoning Board of Appeals. I had an individual that reached out to me, whom I met with. We had a great conversation for probably about over an hour. I know that some other board members have also spoken, maybe all of them have spoken with him.
No.
Most of them
have.
I think he'd be a great addition to our zoning board, and that will fully constitute the board with that vacancy being filled. And my recommendation is to appoint Justin Farrell as a member of the Zoning Board of Appeals.
Were there any other applicants for that position?
There were none.
There were none. Okay. I would so move. So moved.
Second. Thank you.
He's a great young man. Very much wants to be interested, be involved in all the things that the town is moving forward in, and is very interested in seeing the growth along the commercial corridor. I think he'd be a great addition, and I appreciate his willingness to serve his community.
Great. So, motion and a second.
I didn't hear who made the second. I'm sorry.
Councilwoman Lefebvre.
Thank you.
You all set then?
Yep.
Any discussion?
Yeah, I spoke with Justin today. He's a very nice young man. I asked him, the first question I asked him, why do you want to get into this? And I like that. I really like the answer he gave. He says, well, right now I've got the time to do it, to put into it. I want to get involved in the community. And I want the more people that get involved in this process, the better I like it. And he really seems gumbled about it. He talked about, getting ready to go to training and stuff, So he's very, very up on it right now, and I think it'll be an asset.
And I would add that, it's a great zoning board. It's a great way to get your first foot through the door. I sat on a zoning board of appeals in a neighboring town for between 4 and 5 years, a few years back, and that's where I learned a lot about local government from the ground up. So I think it's a great opportunity for a community member to be involved, and I think Mr. Farrell would be great.
Any other discussion?
Nope.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Yes.
Motion carries unanimous. Item 11 is the South High Marathon Dance. I received a, actually, I think all the board members received a letter from Daniel Albert, from the board of directors for South High Marathon Dance, requesting two items. The first one is a temporary waiver of our sign law. which the town board does not have the authority to exempt somebody from a local law. And they want to put up the usual BMS message board announcing where to park and things like that. Second request, they're looking for temporary parking restrictions on Merritt Road and Elmwood.
I think they did that last year.
Right? We've done it the last 4 years.
4 years, yeah. They said that they would do the no parking signage.
They've done it the last 4 years.
Okay.
So yeah, it's going to... They got snow to stick them in the snow.
You
got
to have snow.
It's a different story than the snow.
It might happen.
Okay. So the board's okay with it. I don't need a resolution on it. I just wanted to make sure the board's okay with it before I report it back.
Okay. We're okay with it.
All right, I shall report that back. Item 12 is privilege of the floor. Any members of the public would like to address the board, please state your name for the record. Keep your comments germane to town business, and you will have 3 minutes to make your comments known. Anybody like to address the board?
Well, somebody's going to ask a similar question. I just want to ask.
Yes, sir.
My name is Thomas Wade.
I'm sorry, I didn't.
I'm Thomas Wade. I live in South Plains Falls. I just wanted to ask you here on the number 9 water district consolidation. You said the cost was going to be like $24,000. We're in the long run. Does the taxpayer save the money? I mean, what's the purpose of the consolidation?
So, yeah, so we, prior to moving forward with the consolidation effort, our engineers at the direction of the board applied for a CREG grant, and I believe 90 or 95% of it is reimbursed.
I don't know. I mean, why are we consolidating? What's the purpose of the consolidation?
Consolidation is to reduce administrative workload.
It's going to save, probably in the long run, taxpayers a few dollars.
Well, yeah, so the taxpayers don't pay for water and sewer districts, the districts themselves, the residents in the district that you
have. That's what I mean.
Yeah, so, so it'll have, has the potential to have an impact on rates.
Okay, no problem at all. Sounds good. Thanks.
I don't know if anyone always struck me with it. I think it was Jesse and I talked about it some time ago about the water district. In the past, we've heard people say, well, the districts with a lot of money, they're not going to want to come into the district because they've got so much money. But the districts with a lot of money in reserve don't have anywhere near enough money in reserve to cover the cost to replace their pipe. And their pipe in that district, correct?
Not even close.
Yeah, not even close. So they can look at what's in their reserve funds and say, look at how much we have, and why would we want to consolidate? Because by consolidating, the money would go for whoever needed it. But the benefit is that district may have a lot of money, but if something happens in that district, that money is a pittance compared to what it would cost if that transites, right? Is that what it's called? Pipe fails, and that pipe has been there a long time. For some of the districts with
less... Well, you're not interchanging the districts. You're keeping them both separate at all times, right?
It's a paper change, right?
It is on paper. That they all use the towers, and the towers work for the entire... all the water districts. So right now, certain districts are paying for the water towers, the districts that they're in.
Yes.
So this would seem more fair that if everybody's using the water towers, the pressure and they're necessary for them all, that they all pay.
Are you going to do like a trial run for with something like that to see who uses more water versus somebody who doesn't, right?
That's
or
is that
where there's more residents, you use more water, obviously. I mean, you know, District 2 and 4 have the greatest amount of people that use the water, so, you know, they're the ones that benefit most from it.
So it's an equalization?
Yeah, I believe it really is. And it also protects the ones with old pipes, and it helps the ones with very little money there. They need something, but they're the newer districts with the newer pipes. So everybody...
Spread the cost?
Yeah, it helps, yeah. Okay. Just in case.
That's my only thought.
That's how it will be.
Would anyone else like the festival? Yes, sir.
In regards to the roof repair work, I think I would also recommend, I don't know what the design is or what kind of material, but normally with something like that, you have the producer of the material have some sort of inspection requirements for the warranty. Just putting it in accordance with the drawings doesn't necessarily they meet all the requirements, such as temperatures of durations of insulation work for adhesives or whatever might be used. So what's done in the past is to contact the supplier of the material, find out what his requirements are for extended warranty. Sometimes they require some sort of site supervision during different stages of it. But this way you get a warranty of the material. Normally a contractor is just going to give you a guarantee on the workmanship, not necessarily on failures of the materials.
Right. We've already looked into that when the bids came through. Our engineer at our request went through and verified all the warranties on the product in addition to the workmanship. And so they will be held to that standard that they already reviewed.
That has to be reviewed because a lot of times you'll get a standard limited warranty. But unless they have somebody actually on site doing the observation of certain things, then you might have to cover for more extended time. Just something else to look into.
Thank you. Anyone else like to address the board? I'm sorry, did you say your name for the record? I know. Yeah, I know. I don't know if the clerk got it.
Yes. Okay. Yep.
Good evening. Dominic Tom, Cedar Lane. First, I'd like to congratulate Board Member Hogan for publicly expressing his surprise and skepticism regarding the replacement of a planning board member that was announced at the board's organizational meeting and being concerned enough to abstain from the vote. I was there, so I saw that it's a clear indication, and I know this is fact, that the 56 resolution agenda was given to the board and public just before the meeting started. Whoever's responsible for compiling the mostly standard annual resolutions had since November, when election results were finalized, to ensure the legislation was ready and distributed in enough time for all board members to review in advance. Further, to allow voting on 56 resolutions without providing a public comment period or suitable advance notice is very questionable, regardless of the stated quote, supervisor's discretion, unquote. There's a possible solution to this, and that would be to hold a public board workshop a few days before the regular meeting, so the agenda items available at that time can be explained and discussed in depth. Second, I'm going to let the board know that I lodged a complaint with the ACLU over last fall's board meeting, when the supervisor twice interrupted me while I read a prepared statement, then claimed my 3 minutes of public time and comment time expired. This amounted to a violation of my freedom of speech because it was a bogus accusation that I was making personal and political attacks. I'm formally notifying the entire town board that the ACLU executive director told me that any citizen whose public comment time is interrupted by an elected official is to have that wasted amount of time added on to the original time limit. More importantly, the executive director said further such interruptions should be reported to the ACLU via an official complaint, as they will consider them a repeat offense on the part of the Murrow Town Board and will consider taking legal action. Finally, I urge this town board to establish a policy or issue a directive that all non-elected salaried department heads / managers, / supervisors, or a top supervisor be required to attend and, if necessary, participate in every regularly and specially scheduled town board meeting. This will serve to improve communication with elected officials and the public. During my earlier stint as a reporter, I covered many local and county government bodies, school districts, economic development groups, and others, and they all required attendance of their managers. Murrow was the first town I've encountered that fails to do so. And I'd like to personally point out that Jesse Fish, not elected official, is at all the meetings. And you can see the positive effect from having the record here tonight. Thank you.
Anyone else like to address the board? If not, we'll move on. I'm sorry.
Okay.
We will move on to supervisor items. First item among the supervisor items is I want to announce that I'm appointing Bridget Martin as the local historian for the town. And in doing so, I'd like to thank Mary Antis for the service to the community that she has provided in that position over the past several years. And I'm also appointing Deputy Supervisor Noonan to the newly created position of the Southlands Falls Central School District liaison, an effort to ensure that the school district and the town not only continue to work together, but having better communication line there. I think you'll do a fantastic job in that position. Our moratoriums on the solar construction of commercial solar arrays in the town, as well as the 6-month moratorium on multi-family dwelling units, expired last week, and I've asked the town council to review those documents. We're going to, we're not all the way where we need to be at this time, so we need to put in place an extended moratorium. She will be providing draft documents for the board so we can work to it. As I can tell you that the town has received enormous interest in solar throughout the town, and by that I mean industrial park as well as the ag district and other areas outside the ag district, and we need to make sure that we have a wide ranging regulation of those arrays for many different reasons, primarily to maintain the character of our community, but also to provide for the town to be a contributor in green energy on the grid. I think there's a balance that can be struck there by extending the moratorium that allows to get there in a timely fashion and do it right the first time. So I wanted to make the board aware of that. I reached out to, as many are aware, the town experienced an IT event Christmas Day of 2019. And so I reached out to the FBI's Albany Bureau and regarding the possibility of them participating in an informational discussion on cybersecurity, which I think would have an incredible benefit to not only our residents, but our businesses and our community and surrounding communities if they're interested in attending. So I plan to organize a meeting for sometime in February, depending on the schedule of the Bureau, where we'll have a special agent that will lead a discussion that will discuss, among other things, what threats they are seeing in our area in upstate New York, what are the best management practices for our residents and businesses to help protect them from these types of issues, and they'll also provide some case studies that they've done in the past to make us more aware of what's going on in that field. And this will be open to the public once I settle on a date and time. I'll make sure the board members will have the opportunity to be there for that forum. We'll do it as an RSVP so we know the number of people who plan on attending so we can adjust the venue accordingly. So as the information becomes available, I'll certainly share that with the board for that. Also want to make you aware, if you haven't already read, that the new Hudson Headwaters Health Network for Monroe Family Health will be opening on January 20th. Very excited about that. There'll be additional services. It'll be larger. It's right there at the gateway to our community. All good things. We're very excited to have them opening the doors and continuing to be a neighbor of ours. I also received correspondence from Christine Orr, the superintendent of Southland Falls Central School District, regarding the school district has adopted a branding logos for use on Bulldog uniforms and things like that. She wants the town to know that's available to our use, for our use if the board has a project, rec department. Did you get a copy of that?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So we appreciate them sharing that with us.
If I just make a comment about that, it's actually that brand, that rebranded Bulldog, the school has now owns, is actually kind of it's a big deal. The Bulldogs over the years that have been on, the designs have been borrowed. Some have been borrowed maybe without someone asking to borrow, but it's, everyone thought it was like okay, and a lot of schools do it. The school went through the proper channels, hired a graphic designer. And created a new Bulldog that is owned by the district and will be on all district uniforms and letterheads. And it's great because it's unique and it's going to kind of be the forever Bulldog at this point until it's officially changed again. So that's a nice addition to the branding of the school.
Item 14 on the agenda this evening is committee reports. Anybody have a committee report?
Sure. Nothing you haven't already covered.
I'm not on a. I don't have anything from my own committee to report, but can I make a comment about the transfer station and the email that's kind of gone around regarding a resident who wasn't feeling as if they were treated correctly?
Sure.
So I did reach out to the resident. Kind of get his take on, his thoughts as to what happened at the landfill. It's an interesting situation because we do everything by the back. If you recall from the email, the individual rarely throws out garbage, didn't fill up more than a 32-gallon drum, and paid for the 32-gallon drum, but actually had three $1.50 bags that weren't filled. They didn't go over the size of 32 gallons. So we paid for 32 gallons, was flagged by our new employee, and I think the employee did the right thing by doing his job. I think the resident felt as if, I didn't go over the 32 gallons, which is what I've always paid for. So it's an interesting way in our pricing. If you threw all of his three small non-filled bags in a 32-gallon bag, he would have been charged a 32-gallon bag. But as a result, there was just he wasn't asked to go back and pay. There was, so I don't know if landfill committee or transportation can talk with all of us, that chat about it. What's that?
Yeah.
And then
I just got received this a second.
Because I see where the employee was doing exactly what we hired him to do.
Yeah.
And then the resident will say, but if I did three 13-gallon bags, that's 42 gallons, and it wouldn't have fit in the 32 gallons, so I would have paid more if I had it. If I didn't have 30, I only had 32 gallons. So we've got to figure out the middle line there so that we got the same message going forward. Everybody. That's my comments on that.
Thank you. Any other committee reports?
Seth has a few things here. My wife told me to keep it short. She doesn't want to be here all day.
Thank you.
On the landfill, I was there today and they got an issue with the landfill with some signage. So I'm going to, and Todd and I talked about it earlier today, it's just something an idea to try to keep people out in the area that they shouldn't be in. There's a yellow line in front of the recyclables, and there's no signage telling people not to go over the yellow line. And people are going over and bending it, and it's crazy, a safety issue there.
I was down there and saw that.
I was talking to the people at the landfill and saying, see people, you see what I'm talking about? They go right out to it, they're bumping their stuff, that it could be an issue. But I don't think it's anything that, a little bit of change and maybe a couple small signs might do. So we're going to look into that. What else have I had here? I went to community center meeting last night, and what I opened up. I've been in and out of community center a few times over the years, but in the last month or so, I've been in there quite a bit. it's amazing to see how much goes on in that community center and how vital this community is. I went to that meeting last night, and I was so impressed with the volunteers that are on the committee. I told Todd today, I said, it would be money being spent all because they are so fiscally responsible. They discussed last night the 20 minutes spending $100. They went back and forth. And I love to see it. I mean, it's because they're really, really concerned and care about their operation down there. I talked to Gina talked to me about the possibility of the town sending out a newsletter and having the community center be part of the newsletter. Something that's in infant stages right now. And they were more than accepting to that idea. And one thing they brought to me at the meeting last night is that they would like to be, and I can talk about it a little bit about this, unfortunately, but, involved in the five-year recreation plan to try to coordinate some of their programs with the recreation program, and I think that's a good thing to get that interaction. And they wanted me to bring that up. What else did I have on there? Community center. Now, I don't know if I'm going to bring up a couple of things. I want to touch on one thing that Mr. Tom said about the department heads and stuff being here at a meeting. I think they should be available to answer questions and explain any concerns that people have. Having them at every meeting and making them sit through we have to sit through, I should say that, but might be a little much. But I wouldn't be against the idea that someone does bring something up and we don't have the answer for it. Maybe having them come to the next meeting and explain exactly and give an answer with their expertise, you know, because like I say, they've got expertise in their field and we don't. So maybe we could do something like that, have them here for a follow-up or something like that, rather than every meeting. I think the same from every meeting, you sit here and you just, you know, it feels like they wasted their time.
And our hourly employees, if you figure, that sometimes a three-hour meeting, if people was to come and sit and have nothing with them at this question,
that's my concern.
40 hours and having them sit here when we don't maybe have any questions.
Right. But once again, if something comes up and maybe we can explain that at the very next meeting, bring that department head in and have them explain. That's just my thought on that.
Yeah, and so at our organizational meeting, if you recall, we had a resolution that basically allowed any board member to request a department head to attend a meeting. Yeah. And as part of that resolution, if they were an hourly employee, they would be compensated.
Okay. But I think it's a good idea to have them come and explain the expertise if there is a question. And I think that's a good point. Two other things actually on here that I got a letter actually from Mr. Tom. A couple of issues that he had brought up in the summertime, and I talked to him about them today. And I just wanted to be just concerned that maybe we could revisit these issues if we seem to have fallen through the cracks or maybe got stalled in committee somewhere or whatever. But, I think they're both worth looking at. Now, whether we'll get anyone from, I don't know. But one of them is the National Grid, have a National Grid, another utility has been contacted to determine the feasibility of these companies bearing in the mid-mass above ground power lines along Route 9 and do it while we're doing the sewer, while the road's open. Now, I think it's a pretty good idea for one reason. Since you brought this to my attention, every time I walk down the road, I see how really ugly it looks down to there with all the power lines and power poles and everything else. Once again, the feasibility of it, I don't know. An answer he was given at the time was it would be cost prohibitive to do something like that. But my thinking is that maybe have sewer committee look into this and at least get the dealers out, at least contact maybe these companies and see if it's something they might do. Now, if it's going to cost a ton of money, I can look at other telephone poles. I think it'd be worth looking into. And I'd be willing to work with people on the sewer committee and just see who we have to reach out to. And we don't know if we don't ask. We don't know if we don't look into it. And I'd like to the supervisor could direct the committee, myself, whoever, to maybe look into this, the possibility. Because we might have, maybe Niagara-Mohawk might want to do something like that in National Grid. National Grid might be look at it and say, hey, we'll work with the contractor. You know, and line up the hole. Maybe they can work something out and save the National Grid's money they might want to do. I don't know. But I don't think we know if we don't look into it. And I'd like to see who we've contacted. If you say we have, I'd like to know who we contacted and what their suggestion. Is there any communications between you and who you contacted so that you know, people aren't always convinced when you say we look into it. I think people are worried. I want to see who you contacted. What was that? You know what I'm saying? Okay, if you could get that to me.
That's one of the first things.
Well, I might be able to save you a lot of time. Okay. I think when we spoke today, I indicated that I had looked into it, and for the benefit of the public, certainly Mr. Tom, I spoke with our engineers before we began this project, indicating that this would be something that, what's the feasibility of it? And he said, well, you're looking at about a $16 million project, and this is probably going to add several million dollars to that. And I said, well, why is it going to add more money to it? And he said, well, our whole project is being done by directional boring. We're not opening the trenches. So, number one. Number two, Niagara-Mohawk National Grid will not ever pay for the installation. It's always on the onus of the municipality. I don't believe our taxpayers would be willing to spend $3, $4, $5 million to alleviate an eyesore if they knew that it was going to double, triple, or quadruple their taxes. Also, you're not permitted to put utility lines next to the sewer line. Sewer lines go in at 5 feet where we're putting them in, and you can't put them in the same hole next to each other, according to the engineers. The other thing is, when you see the work, the only time that you will see somebody other than a municipality pay for such an upgrade is if it's part of a DOT project. And even then, it's only in certain circumstances. So I, for one, would never foist that kind of tax liability on a resident. Not saying it is an allowable suggestion, but the reality is it's not doable.
Sure. And I can tell you, Greg, it's going to cost millions of more dollars, but it's just not. There's one other thing that Mr. Tom brought to me. This is brought up back in summer. Also, the partial tax exemption for real estate, real property of persons with disabilities and limited income. And he brought this up, and I know he supplied a couple of emails and went back and forth between him and Peggy Jenkins. And this actually went from Leader Cronin. And it is something that we cannot do. It's similar. Like I talked to Lena today. Like, I'll tell you what, we're fortunate to have somebody like today. She's really up on her stuff. And she got right out of the computer, started printing stuff out for me, and showing me. She said that it actually mirrors the one that we have in the books right now for the over 65 low income property tax break. And she said it mirrors that a lot. And all we have to do is opt into it. But we also have to work with the school district because they have the 65 tax break too, and they've got she showed me the whole thing, and but they've got a fee scale according to your income, how much of a break you get. But she showed me everything. But she said she'd be more than willing to sit down with the board and discuss it, and tell us our options, and what it would include, what we have to do. But she said it's a pretty simple option if it's something you want to. She said there are rules and regulations on how people qualify and they don't qualify for it. But she said she'd be willing to come to the board, and explain to us what our options are. And she said there would be some people in the town that would qualify for it. You know, she said there would be a lot of people. wouldn't be a big burden on the town as far other people like to pick up the slack, so to say. But she said she's willing to talk to us, and I think it's something maybe that we ought to take a look at. I don't know how anybody else here.
I'd be willing to listen to Ms. Cronin's analysis on it, see what she, you know, what it, what the bottom line would be for us and ultimately the school. You know, we want to keep the school in mind as well, but, you know, if we're going to go forward with something that's going to...
She explained it all to me. Like I said, she knew exactly what I was talking about. She said, we have one that's 65 or over that mirrors that. So she goes, it isn't really too much different. And she said, it is something that's easy to opt into. And like the time that we're talking about keeping taxes down and stuff, especially for people with limited income. Because, you know, a lot of people say, well, it's only 3% increase in something, you know, for somebody with limited income, somebody living on Social Security, somebody living on disability, you know, 2 or 3% is a lot of money. So if they can save a few percent, we can help do that. And it's something we're proud of looking into.
Well, we did discuss it in the past, but it, I know you're new, so I'm comfortable.
And Leah's
the two. She is, and I'm just pressing the table.
Yeah. But I was just saying that the board's agreeable to sit down with Leah sometime and, as a board, and she can explain the whole thing to us, and we can decide how we want to do.
Yeah, I've talked with her on and off, and she did express to me her willingness to talk to the board about it. One of the things that I have always been very cognizant of in my 30th year of government is any time they implement a new tax credit, they're great for those that benefit from it, but somebody has to pay for it.
Right. That's what I'm saying. She said to me that the number of people that probably, like she said, the 65-year-old, I think she said it was 100 or 100, a small number of people who take advantage of that. So it really doesn't affect the whole. She said in something like this, it'd be less than that. So, I mean, that tax credit could be spread out amongst the rest of the taxpayers in the town, but it would be very minimal. And she could tell us the numbers, actually. That's what I mean. That's why I'd like to sit with her and look at the numbers and see if it's feasible, see how it would affect it. She said cost effective. So she doesn't see a huge, you know, better than the rest of the taxpayers. That's how much doctor from next presentation.
Anything else? Open session.
Nope.
Does anybody need any questions?
You know, I got a couple of things.
Oh, good.
Just a couple real quickly. First of all, I took a tour with Jesse of the water department last week. It was awesome. About 2.5 hours with a dog and something. I'm going to tell you, we're lucky to have a man like Jesse. Never seen a man so enthusiastic about his job and knowledgeable about his job. And it was an eye-opener for me because, you know, I don't realize how much he was involved in the water districts and stuff. And he took me all over. It was great. We had that experience with him. I've known Jesse for a long time, so we had a couple of laughs for her out there, too, so that was fun. Tomorrow, I'm at Nalby, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, for the newly elected town official school. I'm looking forward to that and get some information there and some training. So I'll be better at this than following my way through electronic. But I'm looking forward to that and I'll report on that next meeting as to how I made out of that. And I've got one more thing and then I'll be quiet. Old Westro, I brought it up before. I want to bring it up again. I talked to Paul Gilson before the meeting. And I'm going to meet with him. We'll get him over some stuff on that. And I wanted to talk to the attorney, but I want to talk to him about some of the legalities of some of the ideas I've got. But that'll be, I'll catch up with her. And, but I'm going to be talking to Paul, and we're going to meet him. Of course, some things we talked this morning about. Some
right.
Things.
Yeah, it's a very challenging situation. I was down there a couple of weeks ago with Paul. Done interviews. Local media market on it. And if there was a simple fix, we would have done it by now. The challenge regarding that hairpin turn is that if you didn't have driveways, separate properties, three right next to each other, you could put a guardrail around there, and you know, as long as you had enough right of way,
it would do its job. The unfortunate part is you're going to have holes in those guardrails for the driveways. So I'm not so sure that's an option. Talking with the highway superintendent, probably the greatest concern that I have that he pointed out, if you even were to do the spaced guardrails, plowing snow coming from west to east on a blind curve, his trucks would be required, because there wouldn't be enough room in the guardrail there, to be in the other lane. And I think that's more of an imminent danger than not having a guardrail. So we haven't got a solution for it. We know it's a problem, but you know, we're still looking at it. Anything else? No, I entertain a motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Yes. Motion carries.
Yeah, good job.
Good.